this spiritual path that we explore together really every week and in the other activities that we do. So the story goes, this is about awakening. It's about enlightenment. It's about freedom or liberation. Which really begs the question, doesn't it? What is freedom? What is enlightenment? What is awakening? And more importantly, how does that relate to your spiritual path, your unique spiritual path, and even more importantly, to your specific life and your daily life? And this is actually what I'd like to explore for the next few Monday evenings, is this topic of freedom, of awakening. And to offer a few different views, and I think it's important to be exposed to a few different views, because I think many times what happens on in any spiritual tradition or spiritual path is many times you have maybe a charismatic figure or someone with depth that begins the path. For this path, it's mostly the Buddha, but there are other practitioners. And they have some particular very deep awakening or deep understanding. They have a deep taste of freedom. And when they explain it, they can only explain their particular experience and how it worked for them, and also how they got there. But the thing is even though we might come to the same liberation or same freedom, we might explain it differently, and our path might be a little bit different. And I feel like it's really wonderful to hear these descriptions, because I think it can open up the depth of the practice that we're exploring altogether. Like, for example, something that's become quite popular, and I think it's so wonderful that it's become popular in this culture of ours, is mindfulness. Have you noticed how often this word is used? It's really incredible. I think there's now a magazine called Mindfulness. I think that's always the litmus test once the magazine comes out. You know, it's hit pop culture. And what a wonderful thing to have in the mainstream of our society. I think it's a wonderful tool that is being brought into all different kinds of settings, for addiction, for other mental health issues, for stress, even in kind of cognitive behavioral realms. And all of you, many of you probably experienced the health benefits of this path. It's really wonderful. I think it's one of the great things. And just to explore meditation and mindfulness just for that is well worth, it's well worth my while, and probably well worth your while. We can live healthier lives. But hopefully what I want to point out is that's just part of the continuum, a very important part of the continuum. But the continuum is much wider than that. And I feel one of the wonderful things about this Monday night is that we can explore that aspect, which is an important aspect, but to also allow for a broader perspective of where this can lead or how it can unfold. And I feel that this discussion that I hope to have with you, not only tonight, but in the next coming weeks, and then hopefully even in the long term to come back to this, allows our spiritual path to deepen in ways that we might not even have expected. And I do want to point out the contradictoriness of this exploration. I feel, and as well as many of you might feel, that part of a spiritual path is entering into a kind of mystery. We get to begin to taste the mystery, this mystery of living and dying. It really is such a mystery, don't you think? And when you touch upon that, you might notice, like I do, there's a kind of depth that comes to this activity of living and dying when we have some practice, some spiritual path that allows us to touch into that. And so my intention is not to take away that mystery, but to begin the discussion so that we can begin to hopefully clarify the edges of it and maybe deepen our sense of entering into that mystery. The other thing I want to point out is, with these discussions, another wonderful time important aspect of this exploration is our discussion time, because really what I'm doing is I'm going to be throwing out a few ideas or a few metaphors and images, and then I think what's so wonderful, especially about this topic, is coming together and exploring it, batting around these ideas. How do we understand it? How do we not understand it? That too is a part of our spiritual path, not only the meditation, but exploring in the midst of community. And tonight what I'd like to talk about is to give a brief explanation or a brief exploration of this word Nibbana, which in Sanskrit, which you probably are familiar with, is Nirvana, which the Buddha in the early discourses described as the goal of this path, as synonymous with the end of suffering, as synonymous with freedom. So I feel like it's important to get a sense of what is he talking about, or a sense of how he talked about it. And then next week, what I'd like to share with you is a description of awakening that comes from the Zen tradition, in particular from a Zen master by the Zen master Dogen, and his description of it is really very different and very powerful, and I found it really important for my practice. Nibbana. Sometimes it's been described as the highest happiness, or a mind that is completely at peace, a sense of complete freedom. And I want to begin just with that first the definition of Nibbana is the highest happiness. Because I feel that it leads to an important question for all of us here, which is, how is happiness embodied in your life? How is contentment embodied in your life? And more importantly, how do you understand it? I think one of the things I've noticed when I've treaded this path is that one way of describing my journey on this path is recognizing how I fool myself about what happiness really is or where it is. And then with the practice, I realize how foolish I am. And then there's a quality of freedom that comes from that, because I stop pursuing those foolish places where I think happiness lies, and then I get there and I realize there's really not that deep of a happiness there. And then that in and of itself leads me already to a deeper contentment. One way of framing our spiritual path is just that, is finding where a deep happiness and contentment lie. And the Dalai Lama, many times when he gives teachings, always frames the teachings in this framework, the framework of happiness. For example, he says, if you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. Nice and straightforward and clear. A little bit further with Nibbana, this word now. Literally, it refers to a fire being extinguished, a fire going out. Actually, extinguished has been mentioned to be a very misleading word, so a lot of times the way Nibbana is connected to is this quality of a fire that is unbound. And I want to talk to you about this metaphor, this image, because it's not something that we're too familiar with in our culture, but it was something that was very easily accessible during the Buddha's time. So in the Buddha's time, the way that the fire was seen was really quite different. The way that it was seen is that when a fire is actually intertwined with its fuel, like wood, it's actually that relationship is a relationship of the fire being bound up with its fuel. And when it's bound up with its fuel, it's agitated. It's trapped. It's dependent. So it's sometimes I think in the Pali language or the language of that time, when you light a fire, you seize the fire. You bound it up with some kind of fuel. And so Nibbana would be the opposite of that. It's the freeing of the fire from from its fuel. So it's not the fire going out, it's the fire being released. This is very important because so much of the time Nibbana is spoken about as the fire being extinguished. But that wasn't the understanding of fire in at that time in India. Do you see how radically different that is just right there of how you think about fire and its relationship to its fuel? And this is important because we have to understand the context of where this metaphor is being explained to really get a deep sense of it. And so you might hear from this when you start to get more of a sense of this image or this metaphor that really what this freedom is, this Nibbana, is it's this process of not being entangled anymore. It's not being bound up or agitated anymore. It's getting to a place where you're free of the things that agitate the mind. And also, do you notice in this metaphor that it's a metaphor of letting go, a freedom based on letting go rather than acquiring? And I want to point out this is quite different often than the way we use freedom. A lot of times the way freedom is used, especially in America, given our roots, is that freedom is, for example, the ability to do whatever you want to do, or the ability to get to acquire whatever you want. And sometimes in our minds we have that belief system underlying. If the sense of having what I want, that process of getting what I want is that's what's going to make me happy. The process of getting what I want leads to happiness. And I feel that this path is calling that belief system into question. Asking, really, does your happiness really land there? With this simple process of just trying to find all the things in the world that bring happiness? And don't get me wrong, I wish for all of you to have all the things that bring you happiness. I really do. I don't mean that lightly. I think it would be a wonderful thing. And even the Buddha talks about that. He talks about cultivating the conditions, the appropriate conditions that lead to our happiness. This is a big part of our practice. We cultivate the external conditions and then even the mental conditions that lead to our happiness. Cultivating a calm mind, an ethical mind, because it's calmer, it's happier. That's really great stuff. And we live in a world of changing conditions. So it can be a tragic place to put all our chips into that bag. Does this make sense? We're too rely too much on that belief system. It can be lead to some serious unhappiness. But I'm sure many of you have already noticed that. And maybe that's why you're here, is you've had that taste of wisdom, you could say. This image of fire being unbound is a different image of what freedom is. Being disentangled, not wrapped up, not confined. Also, the metaphor speaks to, you could say, the mystery of awakening. Because when a fire is released from its fuel, where does it go? Does it go up? Does it go down? Because in Indian cosmology, you can't really place. There's not a location that it goes to. You can't really say that it exists. You wouldn't want to say it doesn't exist either. So even these phrases, exist and don't exist, don't really apply to this metaphor of the fire being released. In some ways, there isn't these descriptors of here or there any longer. So there is that element of mystery in it as well. Also, I want to point out, that goes hand in hand with this, is to notice that Nibbana is not a place. You might be getting a sense of this. It's not a place at all. And a way of understanding that it's not a place is to bring in another word that's commonly used when talking about Nibbana, and that's samsara. Does everybody know this word, samsara? in a superficial way, it refers to this world of suffering. But in some ways, that's an incorrect translation. Samsara is really more of a verb. It's more of a process. It's a process of creating things, or creating all worlds, and then getting lost in those worlds, like the worlds of the concepts and the thoughts that we have. And Nibbana is simply the end of that process, the end of the process of creating the worlds that cause your suffering. So it's not like they're two different places, or that they're even opposite. It's that we have this mind that creates worlds, creates concepts, that creates all kinds of things that don't serve you. And Nibbana is simply the end of that on many different levels. I want to give some examples of this so that you might get a sense, more of a sense of this image or this metaphor. One way of seeing it is that is just the example when your mind is perseverating on something. It's caught up, it's completely agitated by something, and it can't let go of it, and it's just so lost in it. And then there's that moment, maybe through being aware and accepting your experience moment after moment, that the mind lets go of that and there's some clarity. You could say that that is a moment, I'm going to give a whole spectrum of Nibbana, that's a moment of Nibbana, that's a moment of freedom. Right? The process of creating that world has just ended. Remember, Nibbana is the ending of that process that's causing suffering. So right there, there's an easing of the mind, or another word that's used for Nibbana is a cooling off. Like Buddhadasa Bhikkhu would say that Nibbana can be used like around your oatmeal. Oh, my oatmeal's too hot. I'm going to let it Nibbana for a little while. I'm going to let it cool off in a way, so it's not engaged in that process that's agitating the mind. And I think what you're going to notice here is I'm going to try to give a whole spectrum of ways we can understand this word. So it could be around the perseverating. Another example, maybe another story that could help explain this. I know a guy many years ago who moved to Flagstaff. What had happened is he had applied for a job here and finally got this job, and really had never been to Flagstaff before, and had come in on the plane. I don't know if you've flown in on the plane. And it can be so spectacular, you know, seeing the peaks and things like that. So really quite stunned by coming into Flagstaff, and got settled, got into a house, began his job, and one day he was driving around and he saw this person making this movement with their hands, walking down the road. You know, just this movement like this. And his first thought was, Flagstaff isn't much different than other cities. There's crazy people here, too. There's crazy persons going around making these hand movements as they're walking down the street. Every city's got them. And right after he saw this person, he was driving and he turned around this curve, and right in front of him, what appeared before of him, were the peaks in the glory of the sunset. That lighting that comes with the sunset. He said it was so amazing, so stunning. And some of you have noticed that, right? It's so beautiful here at times, especially in the twilight hours. And it was that at that moment, he noticed what his mind had created, right? He had confined that person to this notion of crazy, as if he knew. And yet when he turned around the bend, for him, it made so much sense. It was almost the sense of, how could you not be making that motion with such beauty? So he could say in that moment, the fire let go of its fuel. there was no longer this fuel of imposing this concept, this thought, or this idea on that person. It was released. That process ended. And we do that, don't we? We confine other people with our concepts. You might notice you confine yourself with the concepts that arise in your mind. We create all kinds of worlds that entangle us, that bind us. And when you sit, it really is the perfect conditions that allow the mind to disentangle from that created world, because we're in some ways entering into this direct experience where we can start to allow things to unravel. There's a deeper level, you could say, as well. And this comes from the way the Buddha sometimes talks about consciousness. There's a phrase of consciousness, or consciousness. What I mean by that is that faculty of being aware, like the mind's ability right now to hear the sound of my voice, and that it comes and goes, that very simple awareness. And yet you could say he talked about what you could call this kind of, for lack of a better word, this primordial consciousness, or this primordial awareness that is unsupported awareness, or unsupported consciousness. It's awareness that is not entangled, not bound up with the things around it. So I want to explain this a little bit. The image that the Buddha gives, again, it can be quite tricky. It's as if the sun, he said in one discourse, is shining through the eastern wall, through the window of an eastern wall of a house, and it's shining on the western wall. So he asked, Where does the sun shine when it's going through the eastern wall, O monks? And they say, well, it lands on the western wall. He says, well, if the western wall was not there, where would it land? And they said to the Buddha, well, if it didn't land on the western wall, it would land on the earth. And if the earth were not there, where would the light land? And of course, a different cosmology, a different understanding of the way the earth is. And they said, because underneath the earth is the water, so it would land on the water. And if there was no water for the consciousness awareness to land on, where would it land? And the monks replied, it would not land. There would be nowhere for it to land. And then he goes on to say, just so, monks, a liberated mind, a mind that is unsupported, has nowhere to land. It does not get entangled by anything. How to understand this? A few different ways. You could say that we spend so much of our life, one image that's given, I think Suzuki Roshi once gave this, is that we spend so much of our life like we're in this movie theater and we're watching the movie and we notice the movie on the screen. And our mind is entangled with the movie on the screen. And then eventually we let go of that object and we see the screen on which the movie is being played on. So the background becomes apparent. Oh, there's this white screen on which everything appears. Kind of this groundless ground. So it's like the foreground, or another way of understanding it is it's like the foreground, we're entangled with all the objects in the foreground, and then we become aware of the background. I think a better way of understanding it is it's as if we go around and we hear all these sounds come and go, like the sound of my voice coming and going. And then at some point, the awareness disentangles. It doesn't mean that the sounds go away, but it disentangles enough from the sound to hear the silence within which sounds appear and disappear. So the screen within which all these sounds arise and pass away. Shinzen Young, who's a teacher, talks about it being this figure of ground reversal. Some of you might know this from art, where the figures in the are apparent first, and then there's a reversal where the ground within which all these figures are appearing is that's which is apparent. And then he goes on to talk about that it's as if when we begin to sit, we begin to be aware of how things come and go, and then we become aware of, you could say, the nothing out of which these things, these somethings, arise and pass away. So it's that place of not support that gives a rise to things that feel like they're supported. So it's an awareness that can be aware of things, but not confined, not entrapped, not bound by them. Like the silence out of which sound comes from. It's a huge space where the sounds can arise and pass away, but it's not entangled by them. So it doesn't mean that sound doesn't exist, but there might be a different relationship, not a relationship of entanglement. So this whole range that I've been talking about, right? This whole range of what nibbana can be, of this letting go from the fuel, the letting go of the perseverating, even the letting go of the wandering mind when you're sitting. The letting go of the concepts and the worlds that your mind creates, so that you can have this intimacy with the people around you and yourself and this world itself. And then on an even deeper level, a nibbana where the awareness is not entangled with its objects. It is aware of the objects, but not bound by them. So tonight I invite you to explore the simple practice of disentanglement. And what's important for the practice of disentanglement is not trying to get rid of things, it's just trying to notice them. So for example, if my mind's wandering, just noticing, oh, the mind is wandering. And that's what it does. But in that moment, have you noticed there's a moment of disentanglement? You are no longer lost in the wandering mind. You're no longer lost in the thoughts. There's an awareness of what they are. They are thoughts. And there can be a small nibbana, a small release from that entanglement, and even a feeling of relief from that. So let's just take a minute or two if you need to stretch your legs or move around, and then we'll begin to sit together.